I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, roll call. I guess Charles will not be here tonight. And next is citizen input. If there's any citizens that would like to address the council on an item that is not on the agenda, that is city business, raise your hand. I'll acknowledge you and you can come to the mic and we'll give you up to 5 minutes. Okay, then do I hear an approval of the agenda?
Make that motion.
Ken first.
Second.
Ken Kaler second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, that passes. Consent agenda, do I hear a motion on that?
So moved.
Okay, Dan second. First. Mark Snyder second. Any discussion?
Discussion.
Mm-hmm.
I will again be voting no on the consent agenda. In consent agenda is the warrants, and in the warrants was a voucher to pay the street contractor MRM for work completed January 1st to January 31st for $55,000, which I think is ridiculous. So I'm voting no.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same?
Aye.
Okay, Mark, duly noted. All right, where are we at? Ordinance amending OMC Chapter 17.70 entitled Accessory Uses Building or Structures. Daryl.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Good evening. For the record, Daryl Piercy, City Planner. Before your consideration is an ordinance that would amend Othello Municipal Code to provide for regulations dealing with accessory structures. You may recall we have discussed this over a number of different meetings, and at the last council meeting, the council actually moved and gave direction to revise the ordinance to include a height limitation of 20 feet or the height of the structure, whichever is greater, and a maximum lot coverage of 40%. Those have been included in a proposed ordinance for your consideration this evening, and it was included in your packets and identified as the council recommendation. There's another ordinance in your packet this evening as well, which is an ordinance that would cap the overall height of accessory structures to 22 feet, regardless of whether or not the primary structure on the lot was taller than that. This is a proposal that was brought forward by the mayor in a work study session. I was asked to bring that forward to the council so you have that for consideration this evening as well. So just so there's no confusion, the council recommendation is the one that actually meets the council motion that took place at your meeting January 24th of this year. The second option is the one that was brought forward and discussed briefly at your work study session just a week ago. So we're happy to respond to any questions that you might have in regards to either ordinance that is before you for consideration, but we would anticipate that you would take action on one of those ordinances this evening.
I guess my concern is I have a two-story home at the end of my house. I just sort of went down there and just pictured a garage as high as that two-story home, and I thought, that's no different than the one on 14th that everybody was getting excited about. So that's where I thought we need to have a 22 feet maximum height, you know, because I sort of in my mind mentally drew a two-story garage in there, and that's one big garage, you know. So that was my thought behind that, 22 feet, so.
I like that thought, but this ordinance won't only impact some of our existing lots, but it'll impact any new lots that are created in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And one of these is R1 zones that could potentially be created, which are a lot larger lot. If we restrict it to 22 feet, we're restricting those R1 zones to a smaller garage if they possibly build a two-story home. A great example is a home up on 12th Street. I believe it's the Garza home. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, beautiful home. He recently built a two-story garage out back. It would eliminate those such possibilities. With our current lots that we have right now, I think what will come in play is the 40% coverage, and the garages have to be aesthetically look like the home. And I think that will kind of restrict a larger two-story going on some of our other residential zones that we have in town now that ain't large enough to carry that. But I think we also need to look into the future too, of restricting any future growth or development.
Now, from what we understand, a 22-foot garage will put a motorhome in it. Is that what we understand?
Yes, I actually believe that the 20-foot garage would accommodate the majority of most recreational vehicles. And that's when we were trying to create the bottom end of the height, the 20 feet. You may recall the council discussion appeared to be reasonable because it would accommodate most of those uses that people would like to have available for the use of these accessory structures.
There's just no easy answer because my house is only 15 feet for where the roof line is now, and my lot is on a slope. Where I would put a garage is in back. There's a basketball court there now, and so if I put a 22-foot garage there, that thing would be 7 feet. I could be 7 feet above the house, plus probably the slope is another 2 feet. I'd be 9 feet higher than my house. It would just stick out like a sore thumb there. So this doesn't, all our work doesn't prevent that aspect of it, where it, all of a sudden there's a big garage standing out for everybody to see.
Well, I went out and measured my house, and it's 14 feet 2 inches. And you add another inch for the shingles or something like that, so you're going to end up about 14.4. You get 20 feet, it gives you 6 feet. I kind of like the 20 foot or the height of the existing structure, whichever is greater. The garage, as you're talking, the one up on 10th Avenue is a large garage, very steep roof, storage area, I guess. Got skylights and windows and stuff in it, but it looks okay alongside the house that's there. And in that particular area, there are some houses that have two-story entries with, and I don't see anything wrong with it, with the height of the existing building or 20 feet, whichever is greater, and the 40% should be okay.
Any more thoughts? Ken, you started to speak.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've been contemplating on this thing too. If you've got a lower house and you want to build a higher garage, it's not really fair to that house either. If you want to put a motorhome in that house, why jeopardize that particular person just because he's got a low house? And yet you've got a two-story house that's legitimate to build one as high as his house, or at least 20 or 22 feet. So I think we need that standard in there somewhere, one or the other. But I don't think you should jeopardize somebody that's got a single-story home and keep them from building an outbuilding for a motorhome. So I think it should be at that 20 or 22 feet. 20, I think, is ample for a motorhome. I don't see the reason you need it any higher than that. You could lower the pitch of the roof a little bit as long as you stay under our standards and still have ample room for that.
And Councilman, just to be clear, both of these ordinances set a minimum cap, one at 20, one at 22. So you would be able to, under either one of these ordinances, whether you had a single-story house or a two-story house, build up to that 20-foot level. And that was the intent of the council direction on that ordinance.
Can we take a step back? What was the intent of the Planning Commission?
The Planning Commission wanted to have consistency in scale and style from the accessory structure to the primary structure. So their feeling was that if you had a neighborhood that the scale was all single family ramblers and that the maximum height of those ramblers was around 15 feet, the accessory structure should reflect that. And that there may be situations where you would not be able to fit things such as a motorhome in those under those circumstances, but if you had a hardship, they also recognize that there's a process that would allow you to seek some deviation to that from the council. So their main interest was to provide scale of the neighborhood and consistency of architectural style and materials.
Were they okay if it was a two-story house to make the garage higher?
They were fine. That was okay with them, yes. And again, because it was keeping the scale of the structure, the primary structure that was already on the lot.
One other thing I might add is this doesn't necessarily address this ordinance the way we've got it set now because we've got away from our maximum size. But I think we ought to still keep it in mind further down the road. We don't necessarily have any of these areas now, but I still think we're going to someday have to put in that restriction for the limit on the size of that outbuilding. Because if you've got a developer comes in here and builds some larger lots, either half, three-quarter acre lots, even this 40% is not going to take care of the problem that we address sometimes when you get a bigger building than what your house is. But I think this ordinance would be fine with what we've got at the present time. And I still think back in the future, or ahead in the future, that when we get into different plots that are going for bigger lots, we're going to have to come back and address this again.
Well, I don't know about size of a motorhome. You know, they're pretty much longer, but they're not that high. I had a fifth wheel trailer, and it sat on top of the hitch in the pickup, which is this high, and then I could stand up straight in there. Mark couldn't, but I could. But there are some restrictions to how high they build them, and it couldn't have been over 12 feet. It may be 11 and a half. So a 12-foot door should get you a motorhome in there unless it's, you know, two-story job or something. But I don't see, I think the height of the existing building or 20 feet would be within reason as far as I'm concerned.
So am I hearing any motion? Any way, any direction, or do people like what Daryl just said with the Planning Commission? I just brought up.
I'm going to make the motion. For the.
That'd be the first option.
It's the first option that we have.
It would be the council option.
Yes.
Okay, we have a first.
Second.
Mark, second. Any more discussion? Oh, wait a second. Bob, you want to say something? Or wait, we're in the middle of voting here, though, aren't we? I'm going to let Bob there. State your name and address.
Yeah, I am Bob Carlson. At 2213 South Broadway.
That was in the direction of council. Yeah,
I remember, did you guys, originally when the Planning Commission came, their recommendation was the accessory structure couldn't be larger than the size of the primary dwelling or the height of the primary dwelling. And it looks like right now they're taking out the size of the primary dwelling. I just want to make sure that's what you want.
I thought we had something in one of our original
it was
ordinances.
Yeah.
to that. And I agree.
But you need to understand that's not the way it's going. That's what I think you believe.
And I agree. If we have a 3,000 square foot house, I don't think we need a 4,000 square foot accessory structure. So I would amend my motion to include the accessory structure to not be larger than the original dwelling in square footage.
Who seconded?
Well, larger in square footage. Larger to be high, so larger square footage.
Footprint? For footprint, not larger?
Footprint.
I would second that. That's Mark, you'll second that? Change your motion too? Okay. Any more discussion?
I'm going to vote no. I agree with the Planning Commission, and I don't think we should set city standards based on storing Winnebagoes.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, the same?
Aye.
Okay. All right. Where are we at? Main Street status, change order number 3. Who's going first? Taylor, Maury, and Scott.
Mayor, members of the council, thank you for having us here tonight. Just a quick introduction here. I don't know if you remember, but this is Maury Block, office manager. And to his right is Scott Smith, another office engineer in our office. And Maury's going to get us started.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council, and members of the audience. Basically, we're here to talk about the Main Street project, and one of the elements that we wanted to take a look at. About a week ago, Scott and myself came over because the project and its original vision was to be completed about the first week of December. And through some added work, various things, it did not get completed. So one of the first things we wanted to do was take a look at and see how the project performed in the status it was, which was incomplete. And so one of the first things we did, we came over on the 22nd. But prior to that, we put together some photos. We need that as a point of reference. And what did it look like before? And then, where is it today? So the first thing you're going to see, a couple of reconstruction conditions. We've got cracks, there's wheel ruts, various things like that. Let's go to the next one. And it's just a continuation. And one of the things that I must state, there's a few things we don't know about the project. The things we don't know is, how old is that existing pavement? If there's in some factors, very good, from making an assumption some of this pavement, the surface pavement that you're looking at there in this photo, is maybe 20, 25 years old. The underlying pavement that's below that could be as much as 40 years old. And so it was just some information that, we don't have, and it may spur some questions. I think one of the things we wanted to take a look at, as we look at a roadway, we look at both the cross sections. If you were walking down the street, a cross section is 90 degrees to you, and also the profile of the road, how it will behave. Because again, like I said, it was intended this was all to be done at this point in time. So this has experience, cold and wet, more than anticipated. What we did see is it has a uniform cross-section in it. Up and down the road, we drove back and forth, walked it, and we didn't really see anything out of the norm. There are parts and pieces here, and when I say that, there's norm, but there are parts and pieces along here that there's going to be some subgrade repair, right, where it's badly alligator, a few things like that, and that's to come. The thing that you don't see are big holes from a bad subgrade, either in the cross section or in the profile. And you, those are very distinguishable when you look down a road like this. And if you've been used to seeing things like that, you can see it a long ways off. So the perspective that we're looking at here helps us understand what's going on. Next page. The concern over stability of the subdivision. One of the things we look at as designers when you're looking at a roadway is we want the material to be as granular as possible, as free draining. The one issue, no matter what you do, that can cause a problem is moisture. That decays asphalt, decays concrete, and would decay or degrade the subgrade. In this particular instance, these are pictures from when we had the road open for installing the storm drain. It's extremely granular. So that was a pile as it came out. This is a cross section in the ground. And that granular material, what that does is that as the water moves through it, I'll tell you right now, asphalt's not impervious. Water goes through it. And that's the one thing we try to guard against, limit that amount of water going through it, or get disperse it as soon as it does go through it. That's what you have here. So from a stability standpoint, it's good material. There are a lot of places that don't have that. You have to deal with some other things. You might have to redo the subgrade with cement soil treatment or lime treatment. So these are some of the conditions we saw, we know about, and we feel comfortable standing here before you tonight saying road stability, not an issue. What I'm not saying is it won't crack, because it probably will. Those kind of conditions come up. Scott's going to take over now and talk a little more about some of the asphalt, some of the other conditions there.
My name is Scott Smith, and boy, that's going to come up here. I've been rating payments for several years. I was an ARPA TIB and rated dozens and dozens of small city pavements, 20 years experience with pavements and pavements. Transportation Improvement Board, they're a funding agency, and then they go out through, if your city's 5,000 population under, they'll go through and they'll rate the condition of the pavements. So I was the region engineer for Transportation Improvement Board in the Southwest region. So I've seen lots and lots of pavements. This one, like Maury said, the main thing with pavement failure is, well, there's a lot of causes of pavement failure, but generally the major thing is back drainage, and the loading is more than what was anticipated. Because the main purpose for pavement is to carry loads. And so if it gets wet, it gets saturated, it doesn't work as it was intended to. In this case, I didn't see any problems with drainage. We saw a lot of alligator cracking. Do you all know what alligator cracking is? This is a good example of it. That is your typical alligator cracking. That needs to be removed and resurfaced. You can't pave on top of that. You can see, basically looks like the back of an alligator. So there are areas throughout the project that are your typical alligator cracking. There's a lot of other areas throughout the project that is, the cracking is thermal cracking or block cracking. It's not related to not having a strong structure. It's more related to weather conditions. The cracking in this case looks to me to be, or looks to us to be, more a question of age of the asphalt. We don't know that for sure, but typically what you get is the asphalt gets old, it gets the oil inside it oxidizes out, it becomes brittle, and it's not as strong as it was on the first one down, and it cracks because it can't carry the load. That's what it looks like to us, that in the wheel pass, you've got that one either cracking, and the rest of the road, there are cracks that go over the holes or whatever they did. And so what we did here was we put Geotech and Geotech report on it, and they said that they would remove 2 3/4 inches of asphalt, and they replaced 2 3/4 inches of asphalt, because the reasoning being it carried the load so far, other than some cracking in the wheel pass because of the old pavement. And we understand that there won't be as much loading in the future, because that's something we'll discuss, perhaps moving some of the heavier traffic off of the asphalt. So the structural section, the thickness of the pavement should be okay. So you put 2 3/4, you put 2 3/4 back in, and then in order to delay the reflective cracking, because the reflective cracking will show back up eventually, in order to delay that, they put a geo grid. Now, are you aware of the geo grid? It's basically it's a mesh that they put on top of the surface, and the tensile strength in the mesh, as the loads go over it and moves the asphalt, the tensile force keeps it together a little more. It's not a cure-all. I mean, it's not going to eliminate future reflective cracking. Here it is. They're going to lay this, they're going to roll this out on top of the pavement. First, they're going to come along and they're going to put a pre-level course to level up some of the striations that are there because of milling. And they're going to put a thin layer of asphalt on top. They're going to put that geogrid, they're going to roll that on top of that pre-level, and then on top of that pre-level, they're going to put a wearing course of asphalt. And so there's two questions that I'm aware of, and I think maybe more answer the first one. That is, is the subgrade failed? The subgrade is the what's underneath. Basically, on this road, you have three layers, I guess. Your subgrade, which is your dirt. Then on top of that, you have your base course, which is your gravel. And then on top of that is you have your pavement. So those are the three layers. And so the question is if you get the subgrade, when it gets wet, it becomes muddy and so easy, and it starts to pump up into your base course, into your gravel. Well, that's no good, because you get a lot of that stuff pumping up there. As the loads go over the pavement, they basically pump that water up, they push that silt, that mud up into your gravel course, and then your gravel course isn't having a free-draining course anymore. So that means you have to go through, take everything off, and redo your gravels, so you can have free-draining again. In this case, you don't have that. What you have is you have some pumping out there, but it's just getting the fines out of your base crushed rod. And the question could be, well, how do you know that it's not pumping? Well, we didn't see any signs of that. You'd see a lot more. Hump the dumps, and they kind of do this kind of thing on the road. You don't see a lot of that stuff. You see pretty good. The side slopes are pretty uniform, and the slopes on the profile, which means going along the center line, is pretty uniform too. So we didn't see any signs that would indicate substantive subgrade failure. The second question was that the pavement would fail. It didn't 10 years. And we can't answer that. Because first off, we don't really know what failure means. Does that mean that you're saying, or whoever said it, is saying that it'll start to crack again in 10 years? It may. We don't know. It's a flexible pavement. Cracking does occur. The thicker the pavement is, the less risk you have of it being cracked. So it's a question of how much insurance is the city willing to buy it? If you put a couple inches of asphalt, or you know, three or four inches, yeah, you have a 95% reliable chance of it not failing in the next 15 years. But we understand that there were some budgetary constraints, and so you do the best you can with the budget. Is there anything else I need to mention?
No, I think one of the things that there's a lot of information that we're kind of throwing out there. We're not hitting all the detail points that we would take into consideration for design. But we think we're giving you the information and maybe the ability to ask us some questions, because we're not really sure what you're thinking about in that regard. I think some of the things that we see, the asphalt as measured from 7 to the east, about 14, was typically about 6 inches. It was a little thinner when we got in, and what we heard anecdotally was it was all 6 inches or greater. So there's some things in there that vary a little bit. One of the things you will see if you go out there right now, if you get in the parking areas, a lot of when they build up the asphalt, there's nothing left other than base course. And but obviously much thinner than 6 inches. It's a parking area. Do you need to have the same amount of asphalt in the parking area? And all I can submit to you is that a lot of parking lots are only 2 inches thick. We can go back there and we can look at it, but the contractor, obviously, to excavate more material out, put more asphalt in, he's got a lot more money.
On the parking areas, a lot of the designs of the thickness for pavement design, we're using, there may be people out there who've dealt with pavement design, but we're using the 1993 ASHTO design method, which is the most common method to use. And it, based upon the low loading of the parking areas, it's about 2 to 3 inches compared to the main line.
I think the one thing that we need to tell you is you're paying in the pavement out there, you're paying for the pre-level, about 3/4 of an inch. You're paying for the grid, which, as you saw, quite thin, and you're paying for another 2 inches of asphalt surfacing. Well, that relates, that grid there nominally adds about an inch of asphalt. All the information. So you're getting about 3 3/4 inches of asphalt. And if you would just place it as two thickness. I guess that kind of concludes our presentation. If there's questions there, I'm glad to try to answer them.
I guess I got one. you showed us the outer gating. Is that part of the contract?
Yes. Okay. There are parts of it on subgrade repair that are under the contract. So
all the removal of all the areas that are the weakness, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. The thing you have to be careful about, we were talking, there's some areas that look similar to this, that what we call thermal block cracking, that has nothing to do with subgrade failing. And when you look at those, the continuity of the slope and the profile stays the same. They're not, when you drive through one of those areas, you would really notice it, because every time a vehicle goes through there, it either is pumping water out or soil out, and it's starting to, every time you go over it, that pothole, if you will, or that depression is getting worse.
And I needed to distinguish between the two types of alligator cracking we saw. This is the worst case of it that we saw out there, about alligator cracking. Alligator cracking, if it's still intact, basically this, if you don't see pop-outs and a lot of distortion, you can overlay that. But you can't overlay this where you've got, you can see where it's starting to crumble on the sides. So there's a lot of alligator cracking out there that might look like alligator cracking, but the edges are 90 degrees. That's block cracking. But you do have alligator cracking out there that's intact that you still don't know over. So they're not going to dig up all the alligator cracking, but they're going to dig up the worst. And a lot of it is adjustment call as far as when is it too bad, that's bad, and when it's not as bad, you can overlay it.
I think one of the things I'm speculating when I say this, that as you're driving from virtually here at City Hall West, the road gets very uneven and hummocky. And that is a result of grinding at this time. And we are talking with a contractor about that profile that you left. We're very concerned about it. We want to get back with him, City Plans to do it. Because as it stands right now, that will potentially cause a major overrun in the pre-level. So we want to get that corrected before we get out there.
So are we looking at could last 20 years?
Right there?
Once it's finished, the project.
Asphalt design life. Typical design life of flexible pavement is 12 years. Now, it lasts longer than that. But I'm talking about from an engineering standpoint, without doing any maintenance, 12 years, that's it. You're starting to see cracks all over the place. They're going to be transverse going across the street. They're going to be longitudinal. And intermixed with that could be block cracking. Much other time.
Now, you mentioned the word maintenance. What do you mean by that?
Maintenance?
Mm-hmm.
Crack sealing, okay. Seal coating.
Seal coating?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Crack sealing is the first thing. What you're doing is preventing the water to get down in between there. The more water you get in, water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. It's the oxygen that reacts with the asphaltic tars, causes them to oxidize, become brittle, and lose their ductility, their bendability. Okay? Asphalt designs are based on flexibility. If you think about it, the way we think about it, it's like having bread built in. It moves back and forth as traffic goes across it, and it keeps rejuvenating itself because of the volatiles that are locked within the asphaltic tars. So you've got those particular aspects of it. But the maintenance, putting the seal coat down, or putting the crack sealing in, and then getting the seal coat on with the chip seal. Those are some of the maintenance items. Most people around the state of Washington, they might chip seal this in 5 to 7 days.
Okay. Any other questions from council? Ken?
Well, I don't know. I agree with you in some ways. Wade, I kind of question here a little bit. I know you talked about 2 inches of asphalt is good in parking lots. That may be well and good if you're driving cars in it. But when you take a parking lot that's got trucks in it, you normally don't do that. You normally put 3 inches of asphalt in as a base, you put 2 or 3 inches on top of it. That way it takes care of that problem. We've got a truck traffic road down here. We need to have it so it maintains that traffic. If we put, like we're talking, you take this alligator in, the way I understand it, you're thinking about taking some of this out, but you're not going to replace it with asphalt. You're going to replace it with just gravel, or which way we're going there?
It will be replaced with about 4 inches, I believe it's 4 inches of asphalt. And then over that will come the rest of the asphalt.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Any of these particular areas, that asphalt should be out of there and gone. You may say if you want to, these little pieces, but they're going to break up and crumble, and that's going to be under your finished coat, and it'll break up that top coat in time. I don't care if you put that mat in there or not. It'll work, and pretty soon you're going to have that problem. But if we can take this out of there and put the base back in, like what we should have had out there when we dug it out, if we'd at least like normally should have been with the road. And this alligatoring, it didn't happen just because we went through the winter. This was way back when we opened this thing up, a lot of this alligator was already out there. It wasn't due to the water that went through with the, by not having a top coat on it and running through that asphalt, breaking up over the winter with our frost conditions and whatnot. So, and I don't know what it's going to take as far as the cost overrun, but I think in that bid that should have been covered, most of this stuff was as far as replacing it. I don't know how that thing actually reads as far as that cost overrun on that. That's something we've got to watch and be very careful with, and we don't get into that situation.
We have line items to take care of somewhere where they dig out the material, they replace it with good base course materials, and then 4 inches of asphalt, and all of that is below the 2 3/4 of new asphalt that's putting in on.
11th Street was a good example of that, wasn't it?
Or right, that was a good example.
That was a good example of that, yes.
Any other questions?
Well, I think we should comment, not only, obviously the asphalt in the road is the key ingredient to this, but there's a lot of sidewalk work being done. And I would just like to keep an alert on keeping our sidewalks, redoing those in a quality fashion, because I've noticed, in my opinion, some is already marginal where they've like put tarps on them and they've marred the concrete. I don't know what they weighed them down with, boards or what. So I think the sidewalk and the curbing, and I will relate to a short story, some input from a citizen who's in major construction. He took an interest and watched the alley entrance down by Carpet Carousel. And he gave me a lot of technical information about it. He didn't think the rebar was right. It should have been 6 inches. They measured it, and spots it was barely 4 inches, the depth. The rebar was sitting on broken asphalt, which really bothered him. And he said after they poured and stepped on it, the rebar was laying at the bottom. So he knew that. But the couple things he said, when he was standing there over an hour watching this, one, he never saw anybody from the contractor come by and look at it, and nobody from Gray and Osborne come by. And he made the comment, I've done jobs, been involved in jobs that Gray and Osborne has engineered, and they usually do a better job.
I can't answer, Councilman Spohr, on what occurred. I don't know.
Right.
There's a lot of territory to cover, and there's a lot of things going on. And that's not an excuse. I want to go back to Councilman Kaler, the discussion about traffic on Main Street out here. Part of the design consideration was that the city would pass an ordinance that would reduce the truck traffic down Main Street and limit it to basically only delivery type trucks. That was one consideration in the design. And I'm not saying you guys want to do this tomorrow. That's a consideration we have for the design. I'm looking at the 2 inches. And otherwise, we would have probably looked at removing a lot more. That would obviously would have raised the cost of the project.
One truck that's loaded has 18,000 pounds on the axle load does more damage than 4,000 cars. So you're right. I mean, if those parking lanes take a lot of trucks, then the calculation that I did, wouldn't work. But it was thin asphalt before in the parking lanes, and I took a look at the pictures that were taken prior to the construction, and the parking lanes didn't seem like they had any problem at all with cracks. So I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that manifest themselves over time. We try to utilize standards of our industry, standards of the construction industry, to develop a project. And there's a lot of things that people are going to see that they may have questions. And I'm sure that everything doesn't get caught. I mean, there's a number of tasks going on. I think one of the things, answer Councilman Spohr. A little out there, we'll take a look at the finished sidewalk. If there's areas where there are gouges in it, if those gouges exceed a certain depth, the one depth that we look at is a half inch because that's a requirement that there be no variations more than a half inch. So that's one immediately. If there's gouges in it from people moving whatever across it, those will have to be replaced. That's part of the contract that you have with the contract requires those particular items.
The other thing I have wrote down is maybe not here, but established. There's a lot of sidewalks to be poured. Who's in charge of monitoring that? Because I know I did a small pour at church. We washed it for 4 hours and left, and sure enough, somebody came and marked it all up. I'd rather have somebody monitor whether that's a city responsibility, a contractor responsibility. It probably needs to be established so we can hopefully just do it once and be done.
It is established in the contract. The contractor has a responsibility for everything he does until you, okay, people are here at the council, accept it.
If there's any graffiti or any of that, the contractor is responsible for replacing that.
Okay.
So it sounds like to me you're suggesting that we get up some type of signs for local traffic only, truck traffic only then. I know we've been talked about it and we're considering it, but it sounds like that would be a good move in the future for us before we're done.
Well, you're going to improve the traffic out there. People are going to be, possibly more cars going up and down the street. You're starting to mix pedestrian traffic with the cars, and you put the truck traffic on top of that. And that could be disastrous at some point in time. Trucks just don't stop on dimes, as we all know.
Yeah, I hope the council heeds what he's saying, because I'm all for that, because even before this project started, I was like, having pedestrians stand there on street corners and a big cattle truck drive by, I'm like, why does that cattle truck need to be on Main Street? I was pushing for that before we even started on this, and I'm all for it. If it's don't need to make a delivery, stay off my street.
There's a lot of wisdom in that. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. And then we have change order 3. I'm not sure who's addressing that.
Before you tonight is change order number 3, which requests 26 additional working days for the contractor. The important thing to note about this change order is there is no money. It's not asking for additional money for the project. All of these items are handled underneath unit items that are already currently in the contract. These days are all days that were needed to improve the project and make it a better project that the city felt was important. One example would be a water line on Hemlock Street. When they were going to start the water line on Railroad and Broadway, it was found that if they did that, all the people west of Railroad Avenue would be out of water the whole time that they were working on that. So the contractor did that additional work in order to keep those people in water while the work was going on Main Street. With that, we ask that the council grant the contract 26 additional working days.
So these 26 additional working days are the winter, is what they're requesting.
The what?
The winter months?
No.
No, this is totally separate from
the
that.
The winter months, the winter shutdown, contract time stopped.
Okay.
There was no days being accounted for then until contract time started again on January 24th. These are all days that were while he was working, these things came up, and we talked to the city and the contractor took care of them, and he's asking for time for that.
This is for all the additional work that we've asked, all the manholes, the sewer manholes that we had to change.
Well, no, the sewer manholes that were changed out were part of change order number 2. There are a couple manholes in here one on Olympia Street, the south half of Olympia Street, that manhole was buried. And when we came to council and the council decided to overlay that side of the street, they found that manhole and it needed to be adjusted in order to fit the overlay. Another manhole is in Lions Park, where the new parking lot is located. That manhole had the same issue as the ones on Main Street. It was old and concrete and dove down at an angle. And it wouldn't have been doing the city any favors to leave that in there.
Okay. Any questions?
Is this where I say I told you so now? They'd ask for an extension. I just, me and my constituents, we're just, you know, beyond mad at this point, and to the point where it's like, time is not an issue. Yes, we would like it done, but more importantly, at this point, we want it done right. We want a quality job, and take your time, do it right, make it nice, and we'll all be happy in the end.
Okay. Any more questions? So do I hear a motion to approve change order number 3 and authorize the mayor or his designee to sign it?
I so move.
Ken Kaler, first.
Second.
Ken Johnson, second. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, thank you very much for coming. Appreciate that. And we'll sleep a little bit better. Okay, renewal of agreement with Saddle Mountain. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of council. We've had an ongoing agreement with Saddle Mountain for wireless services for a number of years, and the agreement is expiring, I believe, at the end of February, and so we're looking at a 3-year renewal. The purpose of the lease is to give Saddle Mountain Wireless a non-exclusive right to operate a personal communication service antenna installation on the city's water tanks located at the corner of 14th Avenue and Ash Street and at Lions Park in Othello, and space on the City Hall Police Department Tower, including rights of way for utilities and access as described more fully in the document entitled Lease for Services and Use of City Facilities for Personal Communication System Facilities. Up to 2 antennas, signal repeaters, 1 per tower, will be placed on top of the city's existing water towers, space for a weatherproof box on the base for components, and 3 small transceiver dishes and 6 small transceiver radios, and space for a weather box on the base for components. And of course, this was all the original agreement. This isn't going to happen in the future. It's already existing and will take place. So the staff recommends approval of this lease agreement for a new term of 3 years.
And did you happen to mention that the police department stuff, we get some use of this?
I'm sorry.
Did you mention that the police department gets use of this and other people in the city, right?
The agreement includes free wireless services for the city in exchange for use of these facilities. That is another issue that has been ongoing as well.
Questions from the council? Okay, do I hear a motion to approve a new 3-year lease for services and use of city facilities for personal communication systems facilities between the City of Othello and Saddle Mountain Wireless?
I move that.
Okay, Dan first. Do I have a second? Gina second. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, that passes then.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Renewal of electrical systems agreement with Burke's Refrigeration. Terry.
Good evening, council members and mayor. Currently we have a electrical system agreement with Mr. Burke's Refrigeration, and it's just about due up here, so we would like to ask for a renewal on the contract with him. Currently, he's asking for $80 an hour for his labor rate, and we're paying $70 now, so we've negotiated it to be somewhere down around $70 an hour for this contract. He won't take an increase. He does some of the special wiring and electrical we do with our street lights and some of our special projects around the city. So.
Any questions for Terry? Okay. Do I hear a motion to move to renew the agreement with Burke's Refrigeration for 2011?
Make that motion.
Okay, Mark Snyder first. Ken Kaler second. Any discussion? Nope. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, then that passes.
Mayor, on that last issue, I'd just like to compliment Terry as he spoke. The proposal was for $80 an hour. Terry backed him up and kept him at the same rate he's been the last couple of years at 70, so he's watching out for our city budget.
He should have been on the negotiating committee.
Okay, consideration of operating engineer's contract. Okay, guys. Amen. And ladies, sorry.
Speaking of the negotiating committee, we discussed this last week at the city workshop. The operating engineers have made a proposal to the city. The city council negotiating committee is recommending approval to the council. And that is for a three-year contract, the first year being 2011, that we increase our medical cap in the numbers that we discussed last week. No wage increase for 2011. And for 2012 and 2013, a wage increase between 0.75 to 2.75, whatever the prevailing, the CPI West, all cities is from August to August. And the same for 2013. So tonight we're asking you to authorize the mayor to sign the three-year agreement with operating engineers with those terms and conditions.
Any questions? Okay, you mentioned August to August, but it goes all the way through this year, the agreement, correct?
Yeah, that's the CPI that we use. Mm-hmm. Yeah, normally it goes August to August. Okay. But yes, you're right.
So it goes to the end of the year, then the adjustment happens, adjustment. Okay. Okay, do I hear a motion to move to approve the contract with the operating engineers?
I move to approve the contract with operating engineers.
Okay, Dan first.
Second.
Yeah, second. Okay. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, thank you, Eamon.
To clear up a question, Councilmember Spohr asked, the question was, what does the operating engineers pay? What did they pay for 2010? And I said $62 or something. The correct answer is $66.45.
They're getting a good deal.
Okay, resolution surplus city equipment. Who's that? Terry?
Currently, Public Works has a couple vehicles that we're asking to surplus. One's a 98. One time we actually slipped the bed off, put a bed on last year onto the new truck. The other truck is a 92, which is not being used. And it's fairly old, so it's about 18 years old. So we're asking to surplus those two vehicles to auction.
Okay, any questions? Okay, do I hear a motion to surplus two vehicles as presented?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, Ken Johnson first. Do I hear a second? Ken Kaler second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed the same? All right. Thank you, Terry. Okay, unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business? New business? Okay, Mark?
A couple things. It's hard to believe, but in a couple weeks, spring sports is going to be starting. And even though I don't have a child playing tennis, and I think the school should build their own tennis courts, they do use our tennis courts. So anything we can do to tighten up the nets and get the tennis courts ready to go for them would be appreciated. And along those same lines, the town just seems, I realize we have major construction project going on, but just seems gritty to me. And I think it would behoove us to get out the street sweeper and start cleaning up the winter mess. And my resident isn't too bad, but I know around our church is just a gravelly, dirty mess, and I think we ought to, especially as events are coming up, start cleaning up the streets with our nice street sweeper.
Terry, our last staff meeting, we had some issues with our nets, some damage to them by...
We have, currently we have some vandalism down at Kiwanis, where they've taken a razor knife and cut one tennis net, full length of it, or two-thirds of it across the center, so that one will have to be replaced.
So you're aware we're starting to see that again?
Yep.
Not much of it, but a little bit.
We'll replace that one, and we'll type up the other nets as well.
I haven't even looked at them, but they usually need to be blown off and tweaked a little bit, so thank you.
Any other new business?
A comment on the lights to go along with the question about spring sports. The lights, as you know, we've had them stored at Public Works, and we're currently out for bid for installation contractors, so those will be up on schedule. New schedule.
Okay.
What is the new schedule?
The new schedule. I thought I'd say it before you.
This year? This year?
This year's schedule.
That includes lights on the basketball court, too, that whole project, correct?
Yes, it does, yeah.
Okay, I thought so.
On the back side of the pole, yeah.
He was mentioning vandalism in Kiwanis Park, and I know the council is very interested in additional cameras. How's that project going?
We have them. We have to program them and sync them with the PD side. We have them installed. They're here. And we have additional cameras anyway. I'll put it that way. Put up around the pool. One additional camera, if you notice in the east parking lot, the mayor was concerned about the parking lot and exiting on the east side. They're on that new silver pole. There's now a new camera up there that can actually pan from the football stadium to the front of City Hall. And it's very clear, Mayor, I looked at it today. I was very impressed with the quality and clarity of the picture. Yeah, you can zoom in on it.
Sees the north side of the high school, the whole north side of the high school. You can see back through there. And it's got a really clear over to Lyons Park, actually. You can see part of it over there. So it's a nice view.
Now, we had discussed lighting in Kiwanis. Was that going in at the same time as the lighting or in the basketball courts?
I think that's a different project.
Is that a different
it's
project?
It's not the same time. Okay.
That's on the agenda this year, isn't it, Terry? The lights in Kiwanis, the new one?
Yeah. Down here for the cameras and lighting.
That's the cameras and lighting.
That's
a separate project.
Okay. Do you all know there's a, in the parking lot, there's a light out? On the east side, okay.
Yes, they were on top of it Friday and got the numbers off of it and ordered the park.
Good. Any other new business? Okay, we're going to go into executive session. The city council will now go into executive session to discuss property acquisition for 30 minutes. So we'll come back out at 8:34. The city attorney will be present.